You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
What is up, everybody, and welcome into the Keeping It 1000 podcast live edition with myself, Adam Montes, and the star slash co-host of the show, George Carl. Coach, it's good to see you.
It's a nervous day in Denver. Nervous day.
It is a nervous day.
Makes me feel a lot of good memories here. Yeah.
What's your level of nervousness just as an observer?
Oh.
Because mine's 100, like, as an observer, but I'm, of course, nonpartisan.
There's a lot of tactics, a lot of things in this game that the coaches have some buttons to push. Portland, did they get lucky with what happened on game four, or did they reveal some weaknesses? The tendency is the team that wins got to be careful with their cockiness winning.
For sure.
So coming home, Portland won. They might be too arrogant. Their confidence might go to too cocky or arrogant attitude. They have that personality a little bit. They're I wouldn't say they're a fundamental team. They're more of a flamboyant team. And I still believe in Jokic. I mean, I think we all sit here and go, "Wow, he had a bad game." He didn't have a bad game. He had a decent game. He didn't have a bad game.
Missed shots. That's the difference, missed shots.
But, you know, we've had like 3 weeks where he's 7-for-8 in the first quarter.
Right, that's true.
Instead, he goes 1-for-6 in the first quarter. So it was a little bit of a weird beginning. And what I didn't like about the game was there was not many momentum flows by the Denver Nuggets.
Right.
The only momentum flow I felt was at the end of the first quarter when the second unit came back in. There was an energy flow. But most NBA games have 5 to 10 energy flows, back and forth, momentum flows. That game had one.
Right. One for Denver. I think they had 3 for Portland, the start of the first, the end of the second, the start of the third, all the starters.
I mean, the third was disastrous. Yeah. And I thought the start at the beginning of the game was, when I watched it again this morning, Portland made some shots,
right,
and Denver didn't make some shots. So it was understandable that they got an 8 or 9 point lead, and then second unit came in, got some spirit in the game, and they got back to even. And then the starters came back in, and it stayed flat for about the 6 minute mark of the second quarter till the end of the third quarter. And that was it had a little bit of a regular season pulse to it, rather than
not on Portland side.
Well, you know,
I thought Portland, it was chippy in that. I mean, they were aggressive.
I thought they showed some will to play defense every possession, which is, I think is a key to Portland. If Portland can play defense and make the game 100 and under 110, I think it favors Portland.
Yeah.
And if it goes over 110, I think it favors Denver.
Okay. It does seem to me like whoever gets just a little bit of defense, I mean, neither team can guard each other consistently in the series so far, but the teams that put in just a couple minutes of defense, you know, really key in on it and get one of those momentum-shifting runs has won really each of these games. We're going to talk about some of the details here. I want to first remind everybody that we are presented by DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook app. You can use promo code DNVR when you sign up. So we'll get right into the trends into Game 4. And the first thing I want to ask, I just want to get this out of the way because I hate these talking points, but there was a story that came up about a disruption that had occurred at the hotel room the night of the game. So Friday night going into Saturday. This was a game that was separated by 36 hours from Thursday night to Saturday. So it was a quick turnaround. And then allegedly there was, you know, some protests going on in the lobby of the hotel and outside, or what have you. You know, you've coached for so many years. I know you've seen a lot of these where the night of a playoff game, something happens where there's less sleep. Do you feel like that could have been at all a factor? And just sort of what's it like when a team has an unexpected disturbance the night of a game, especially a day game?
I think the day game, the mentality of the day game is worse than probably what happened in the evening.
Okay.
But there are staged the disturbances. You insinuating that the Trailblazers staged
this? Not at all. I'm not insinuating anything. I don't think that. I honestly don't think that was it at all.
I like that. That's pretty classic. We can go for it. Terry Stotts going deep. Red Auerbach, like, I mean,
yeah.
Anybody that's ever played in Boston knows about the heat in the locker room or the coldness in the locker room.
Yeah.
Or the fire alarm going off at 3 o'clock in the morning. All that stuff has been in the NBA, probably still is in the NBA in some form and fashion. But I mean, I think the afternoon, I think the biorhythms of our body, some players don't wake up very well.
Mm.
Some players don't have their high energy in the morning or the afternoon. They have it more towards the night. Other players are adapt to it very quickly and very easily.
So you think the afternoonness of this game threw a real curveball? I mean, I hate that the NBA did this in general. I just don't. It seems like the Nuggets are the, you fill out the schedule and the Nuggets are the last team you slot in. Like, where do we fit the rest in or whatever? So I hated that there was this 36-hour break in between games. But that being said, it was the same for Portland. To me, game four was so much about the energy and effort level. I know there were interesting adjustments, and I don't want to undermine those things, but it is hard, and Michael Malone said this after the game, it's hard to evaluate the X's and O's of a game when the energy just isn't there to say, oh, this defense didn't work, but guys also just weren't locked into what they were supposed to be doing, so do we know if it worked or we didn't? And to me, that seemed like the ultimate story, and I want to ask this question. I thought Jokic looked tired in the fourth quarter of Game 3. I thought he looked really tired for most of Game 4, especially after that first stint that you mentioned, and I, you know, it seems to me like they're putting him in a lot of pick and rolls. They're trying to make him work, trying to make him cover ground. And then on the other end, you know, he has to go up against a really large-bodied person in Nurkic that's just constantly bumping him. Do you feel like this is a more physically taxing series for him than maybe the average of what we've seen from the series prior to this?
Well, if I go back and analyze all the series that Jokic has played in, this is probably as physical of a series, especially when they play Cantor. Cantor probably is going to play the rest of the series, but the physicality of their bigs, and they play them straight up. And I think what they did in game four that I don't even know if you – I think I charted it this morning that they scored 20 points in the first half off of pick and rolls by throwing the ball to Nurkic
right
in the window. And that's a lot of number. That's a big number. And that's why Lillard's inadequacies or failures were made up by Nurkic, a lot by Nurkic, and by Norman Powell.
Right.
And those two guys, I thought, were strategically adjustable by Coach Stotts.
Right.
I thought throwing the ball to Nurkic was definitely a plan.
Are you talking about on the roll?
On the roll, yeah. In the pick and roll where they were hedging high and
right
out. And Nurkic got the ball in the middle, delivered some baskets, also delivered some passes. And then the other guy was Powell, early in the game, got a lot of touches to get downhill. To get downhill, you know, on Gordon.
Right.
And he got downhill.
Right.
And I thought there was another bit of an attitude of their three guards to, instead of shake and bake and shoot jumpers, let's take the ball into the paint and right see what happens a little bit more.
There's a lot of clips, by the way, up on the list right now on the DNVR.com. Those two points, Jokic on the roll and Norman Powell in the pick and roll attacking Gordon, were two of the things that were, you know, highlighted with video clips today, so you can see some of that there. You know, what was it with Nurkic? Because I feel like he's one of the keys to the series. I know you have another one I can't wait to hear you share, but let's stick on him for a second. One of the keys has been his offensive rebounding off of roll. So even when he's not scoring, if Denver is stepping out with Jokic the way that they had, now somebody else has to rotate over, tag him, stop him from getting the roll, or box him out when he gets there. And that's a tough task, especially for Aaron Gordon, Michael Porter Jr., Campazzo, Rivers. There's not a lot of big bodies in that outside of Jokic out there. So what is the key to preventing that? If that's the key, if Portland's trying to get Nurkic the ball on the roll there, how does Denver stop that?
Well, you go back to the drop. You go back to the drop where
the
Jokic
coverage.
Doesn't step up and stepping into Lillard and McCollum. Or you go back to switching to where you keep a body in front of the roll guy a little bit more, where his presence isn't under the basket, but a little further outside the basket. The gig with penetration is you get rebounding.
Right.
You know, when you're attacking the paint and you're attacking the bigs and attacking the rim, it's difficult to give rebounding assignments. That's the gift you get when you attack the rim. And, you know, you can play bigger bodies. But the one thing I thought also that Portland did a pretty – they shot over the little guards a lot. And they would come off the pick and roll. And Powell especially was very effective on the 17-footer. Jokic was in front of him. He just jumped up and shot it over him. McCollum can do that, and Lillard all can do that at a very high level. And when you're playing, Monte Morris might be your biggest guard. And he's not very big. He doesn't play very big as a defender. And they played Howard. They're trying to play Howard to get some points in the game, and he's really small. Faku is a great. I love watching him play. But, you know, I think he's going to have to be more dominating in his decision making by helping other guys get better shots.
Offensively,
you know. You know, he's the only guy really with the ball that attacks to make someone else better.
Yeah.
And what you basically have is, I'll go back to my favorite thing, is a lack of point guard play.
Right.
They're saying to Jokic, you're not going to be a passer. We're going to let you play one-on-one. We're not going to let you have any passing skills in the game unless it comes in flow or off a turnover or off a bad decision-making. And so all of a sudden, you don't have anybody on the court right now that can get 10 assists a game except probably Faku.
Right.
And I think they're missing each other a little bit. They help. This is not a team of individual skills. Portland has more skills than Denver does.
Right.
Jokic is better than Lillard, but probably from the skill asset of after from 2 to 8, they probably have more talented offensive players than Denver. So Denver's got to help each other along the way. Home court's going to help that. Making some three ball, making the three ball is always going to be high on this. In today's playoffs, I thought Portland made, I think, 5 threes or maybe 6 threes in the first quarter. Teams that make it early in the game seem like they make it the rest of the game.
Do defenses adjust to that? Is that because defense in a first quarter, like, oh, they're making shots tonight, you step out? Psychologically, is it just subconsciously you step out a step further? I mean, what is it that the first quarter? Because I agree, it's so important to establish those threes early on.
Well, you know, I've always had a rule that you don't, when at the end of a game, you don't want to give up three ball, especially when you have a lead. And so there's an adjustment at the end of the game to give up maybe a few more layups.
Right.
And don't give up wide open threes. I've actually talked to a few coaches about the way some of these games have the rhythm of the game where, I mean, Denver's done it. Denver's come out and made 9 out of 11 threes in the first quarter. There are teams that are putting up 23-point shots in the game. Those are difficult things to overcome. I don't care. You got to really be good defense. Your offensive efficiency has got to be off the chart to catch up to that hole that you get dug. And so I've actually felt maybe early in the game, starting out in a end-of-game situation on the three ball, makes a little bit of sense. But it's just where we are in the game of basketball. It's evolving. The analytics are telling us shoot it quick, shoot it a lot, and figure out the game as that being a top priority of your offense. I look at the Lakers. I don't think the Lakers are a championship team right now because
the three ball is too tough.
They can't make the three ball.
Great defensively though, incredible.
They're the best defensive team, but there will be better defensive teams as the playoffs come along. I don't know if you remember the year Toronto won a championship. They really got better defensively almost every series.
Right.
To where they were a dominant defensive team at the end against Golden State at the end of the series.
Let me ask you about that, because one of my things about the playoffs, I say one playoff series, you can agree or disagree, is worth 50 regular season games of experience for a young player. That's just a number I made up. But I think that you go in the playoffs, it's such a mental game, and this is a good segue to Michael Porter, because he looks one way in the regular season and another way in the postseason so far, I think in large part because teams are attacking him. They're trying to put him in unfamiliar or situations where he's weakest. And it's not the same flow of, okay, maybe guys aren't locked into assignment or have a game plan specifically for me. But now they do. And in this last game, one of the storylines for me was he had 3 points and 3 shots. That's why I wanted to piggyback off of this is my hope is, and I think Nuggets fans' hope is, that you can get through the series with a win, but also that there's a huge growth curve for him specifically as the series goes on. What have you seen from him lately? You're laughing. I don't think you're seeing that growth curve so far.
Well, I think the key to the game is the Powell Porter Jr. matchup.
Today. Yeah.
My feeling is that Powell was really good for Portland at the end of the season and has not been very good in the playoffs against us. And so he was a big factor early in that game. It released Lillard into not having to be a dominant player. You have to remember, I don't think McCollum has had that special game yet either.
Right, yeah.
And I would expect McCollum to have a special game in this series somewhere along the way. He's kind of become the reserve, the backup guy that I'll be there when you need me guy. But I think what Powell and Porter Jr., Powell not only was great offensively, I thought he got into Porter Jr.'s head a little bit.
Oh, for sure.
There was a physicality to his game that wasn't there before. Nurkic was a little more physical on Jokic. Their whole defensive presence seemed to be a little bit in the face of Denver rather than soft, and Denver could control it a little bit. And I don't think that's going to change. They're running at the three ball, making them put the ball on the floor, making them escape dribble or whatever way they want to get the three ball up. And right now, Jokic is probably their best three ball shooter. And it looked like Nurkic was even up on Jokic a little bit even in those presence.
Talk about the physicality, because I'm with you, and I think it even goes beyond physicality. I think there's a mental aggressiveness that they are being with him after every time, and they're looking for him in pick and rolls. They're looking to attack him. They got a couple plays, pet plays that they are going to out of timeouts and at key moments, start the second half or whatever, that specifically look to target him. I know a stack pick and roll they've run a bunch of different times that puts him on Lillard with Lillard running downhill. They've got a screen the screener action, a back screen. Both of these are up on the list, by the way, but they're all designed with making Porter have to step out on Lillard. And not just him, also Norman Powell, just getting physical with him. And after every bucket that they get off of one of these plays, the whole team is looking at him and screaming at him, meaning Portland. And to me, it seems like they are trying to rattle a guy saying, you're the guy we're going after, and and take him off his game. And 3 shots in the last game, 3 points, he was taken out of the game.
Yeah, they didn't have a second actor. Jokic is off to a bad start, and usually you just drift into your second guy or your third guy. I think Rivers got off to a little bit of a first quarter start. He made a couple threes early, maybe had eight or 9 points in the first quarter, but he died. He faded on that. I think it's a really a coaching matchup tonight. I mean,
really,
it'll be interesting. I'm trying to figure out why we don't put Gordon on Lillard from the beginning of the game. Why don't we just say, hey, we're going to switch all these pick and rolls? I don't know. I mean, I think
will Gordon switch onto Nurkic then on a screen? Is this what you're thinking?
I have no problem Gordon on Nurkic, but I do have problems with 20 points getting scored in the window of the pick and roll game early in the basketball game. The confidence that comes from together basketball was more powerful than a guy making 4 or 5 in a row.
That's true. Yeah.
When the ball is popping and everybody's engaged and more involved, there's a mental flow. And group flow is really, really powerful, and it's the most powerful flow, mental flow in basketball. When everybody feels they're a part of the game, everybody focuses better, concentrates better, and usually delivers more.
Yeah. The other matchups, I think one of the reasons maybe Denver is slow to do that is you do have Faku, who's so small, who I think has to play. Maybe Monte, even if you put Monte Morris in his spot, it's still a small guard. So that person slides over to CJ McCollum. Does your other guard slide over to Norman Powell? You start to maybe you start to feel undersized at the other spots. Is that would not that not concern you?
Well, I would be picking on Norman Powell, covering him a little more than playing. If I think Gordon's my best defender, I don't want to waste him on Norman Powell. I would rather waste him or shorten his minutes and put him on Lillard to the point where you have no help, no responsibility except give make his life miserable in the game. I mean, Rivers is a good defender too.
Right.
And so I think you got to make where you want to place those guys tonight. I mean, I remember coaching a game against Mitch Richmond, Chris Malm, and Tim Hardaway my first year in Seattle. And the way we thought we were going to match up against those guys, by game four, it was totally the exact opposite. You know, we thought this guy could cover Hardaway, and it was another guy that could cover Hardaway. And we thought Derek McKee could cover Richmond. And Derek McKee was better on Hardaway. I mean, it's just weird stuff that as the series goes on, you learn things, and then you try to magnify your strengths, and you try to hide your weaknesses.
So going back to Porter, you know, what would your message be to him in these days in between the last game and this one to try to, one, give him confidence, but also just to he needs a big game, I feel, tonight for Denver to win. If not, and I don't mean a big game like 30 points. He needs to have more than 3 points. He's got to be more involved than he was in this last one. What's your message to a young player like that that doesn't let him off the hook but also tries to instill some confidence?
I'll tell the exact same thing I've told my son 100 times when he was playing college and high school basketball. Why do you make your first couple shots jump shots? Why don't you make them free throws or layups? Learn how to cheat out and get a dunk. You know, go up and get an offensive rebound and put it back in. Do things that are easier to do rather than do the hard things. Because when failure hits you in the face, there's a recovery that has to come. And sometimes when the other team is trying to, you know, take away your confidence, missing early jump shots and... I basically think Porter Jr. tries to make the three ball too early in the game.
It's his comfort zone.
Well, the comfort zone is if you got 8 points in your pocket, you can miss a couple.
That's a great point.
If you don't have 8 points in your pocket, you can't. You're all nervous when they don't go in.
What do you expect from him tonight? Or is it just a mystery? I mean, we haven't seen him enough in the playoffs, but if you were to predict what happens with him tonight?
I think he's moved into a territory that he could have a good game tonight.
Yeah.
I hope he has a good game tonight. I think we need him to have a good game tonight. Because not only does he have to have a good game tonight, I think he's got to have another game in a more difficult situation in a couple days.
That's why it's almost, you know, he could come out tonight and go 5 for 5 from the three-point line on contested threes, and it would be great. Maybe Denver wins if that happens. But you want him to have some kind of breakthrough that's beyond that. That's, hey, this is now how you combat how they're guarding you, that is sustainable and is not reliant on you just making a couple shots. And I'm curious to see it. I mean, this is one of the things. I was hard on Michael Porter last night on the DNVR Nuggets podcast and in the list today with some video clips of different things. But it's by no means saying it's a no-hoper this or that. This is what's fun about sports. You get young players, the spotlight on him brighter than it's ever been in their life, and he's had a spotlight on him, but now he's on a stage where it's like, hey man, they need you to come up and save it. And I'm curious to see what happens with him. To me, that's get your popcorn ready, because I'm so fascinated.
And what's fascinating about it is what Porter Jr. is doing at a young age is difficult.
Yeah.
And history has shown very few players. Magic Johnson's performed early in his career at a very early age. Jordan didn't perform great in the playoffs early in his career. And most of that list says, along with you might have a good game, you might have some great games, but you might not have success either. And I think right now we just want Porter Jr. to have a good game tonight.
Yeah. Let's take a break. On the other side, though, there's a lot of other things to kind of talk about in this series. I want to know if there's a player that should play more, if there's a matchup he'd like to see a little bit more emphasized. Then I want to talk about Carmelo Anthony and his relationship to Denver. I'm sure Coach has a lot of very interesting things to say about that, as well as some of the negative things that have been happening with fans in recent weeks and what maybe that's all about. But first, we have a presenting sponsor today, guys, and that is DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook app, and, of course, my favorite sportsbook app. It's easy to navigate, has instructions for brand new bettors, so if you open up for the first time, you're not going to be lost. What do I do? Where's all of this? It's very easy, and to get you started, they've got this great offer. You bet $1 on any team left in the playoffs, in the NBA playoffs. $1, and if they win, they win $100. Who's the safest bet to win their next game? It might be, you got Philadelphia and Washington, although we don't know the status of Embiid. You got Utah coming home against Memphis. That might be the one. That might be the safest bet. Do you have one you... Is there a team you think is definitely going to win?
The team I trust right now more than any team is Utah.
Yeah, I think so too.
Right now, the team. And the guy I trust because of that is, I think Mike Conley's playing great.
Former Memphis Grizzly. He won him the game last night, man.
I mean, Mike Conley has big cojones.
Man, he's a good player. He's a really good player. So you bet $1. Maybe you don't want to bet $1 to win $100, even if it costs you having to bet on the Jazz. That doesn't feel good. But you can put $1 on any team, and if you win, you win $100 in free bets and site credits. It's safe, it's secure, it's reliable. You deposit and withdraw your money at your convenience. Goes right into your bank account. So download the top-rated sportsbook app right now and use promo code DNVR when you sign up to get that $1 for $100 offer. Again, that's $1 to win $100. Must be 21 or older. Colorado only. New customers only. Wager paid in on-site credit. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. And if you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700. Also want to remind everybody that in this chat, Super Producer Kale right now is earmarking all of the best questions that you have for Coach. At the end, we'll do this mailbag style, and you guys can ask your questions directly to Coach Carl here. And it's a great way to kind of interact with the show. But I want to first go to just some adjustments for this game, and namely personnel adjustments. Is there anybody that hasn't been playing so far in the Nuggets roster that you feel that's a guy that maybe you give a little bit more run or can have a bigger assignment?
Well, the question I ask is, what's the status of Will Barton?
Yeah.
Is he playing tonight?
I think he's out.
Oh, he's out tonight?
I don't think it's been ruled out, but from what Malone said yesterday in his media availability, it sounded like he's not counting on him. Maybe that's hiding a card up your sleeve. I don't know.
I don't think you mess with a lot of the rotation except reducing, giving more minutes to someone and have more confidence. Malone likes to play a guy when he's not playing a guy. He usually takes him out and tries to play another guy. I'd give Porter Jr. a little more leash tonight. Try to get him going a little bit. I don't know exactly how that. I think the two of the first three plays in game four though were run for Porter. And
right.
They were just covered well by Portland. I think you need a secondary scorer if it's going to be a close game. You know, a blowout game like we had game four, you can't overanalyze what happened there. But I just think right now, that game, I didn't know who the number one scorer was.
Right.
Jokic was okay, but he wasn't the great efficient player that we've had all year long. So I don't know if that guy is, you know, Austin Rivers has maybe a game of his career in game three and wins it in the fourth quarter with making four threes. Most of those threes are difficult threes. I think one was open, three was somewhat covered. I'm not sure that's on the forte. I think it's, for me, it's Jokic is game one, game two, game three.
Yeah. What about Shaq Harrison? I mean, he's really rough offensively, but defensively, he looks like he does a great job on all of Portland's scorers.
I agree with that. I see why you like him there, and I would like him probably more as a small-minute player in a situational play. But I just have a lot of respect for Lillard, McCollum, and now Norman Powell. They're pretty confident no matter who they cover. They have a. If you're going to pressure me, I know what I'm going to do. If you're going to double team me, I know what I'm going to do. They found the window in the pick and roll. And as I said, I'm probably a little more scared that McCollum has not had a big game yet in this series. And I just remember 2 years ago, game seven, that guy had the big game was McCollum.
What's your confidence level right now, one way or the other? Do you feel like you know what direction the series is going to tilt?
I think my confidence level in Jokic is big time. I think Jokic is going to, if I had to bet on anything in the game tonight, I bet Jokic is going to have a triple-double, or at least he's going to have over 30. He's going to shoot, and he's going to have a very efficient game. He's going to come bounce back at a high, high level. The thing that makes me a little nervous is the three ball, the confidence of the three ball. I know we're on our home court, but I still think the power of the three ball in these playoffs has been just it magnifies the importance of where the game is going. I don't know who their best three ball shooting team is. I didn't like Aaron Gordon backing up, taking bad threes last game. Mm. I'd like us to try to find better threes and hopefully make some more threes.
Yeah. The thing that's, I think, tough about this season for everybody, you look at the West right now, I think it looks more wide open than it's been in a decade. And I didn't feel that way before Anthony Davis went down the other day, but a groin injury, we don't know. I mean, he's listed as day-to-day, but it looks like he's out for game five. You never know. But right now I look at it and I go, Utah's a great team. They just got Donovan Mitchell back. There's probably still a little rust with him, trying to working him in, but they're a great team. After that, Phoenix is an unproven team. I think they're great, but they're unproven. The Lakers are now banged up. Denver's banged up. Portland is good, not great, in my opinion. They're not a very great defensive team. I think the West, to me, even the Clippers, giving games to Dallas early and looking vulnerable, I just look at this and I think, not to get ahead of yourself, but even Denver, shorthanded as they are, maybe has a better shot than people realized if they can keep it going. Not saying they're favorites, but everybody is so wounded, and this playoff race in the West right now is so wild. Do you see it the same way, as it's way more open than maybe it was even 2 weeks ago?
I agree. I can't deny that. I think the last show we were on, that the magic of winning the championship usually occurs in the second round or the third round. It doesn't occur in the first round. The first round is kind of a slap. Let's wake up. We got to get serious. Okay, we lost this game. We shouldn't have lost, but we'll be okay. And you get through the first round, and then the great matchups come in the second round or in the conference finals. I think there's going to be some great matchups. But I don't think anybody's growing up right now. The thing I like about Utah is I think Mike Conley is a hell of a point guard and has been a proven playoff winner.
Yeah.
And he almost got there last year. He was starting to play better last year for Utah. But the way he played last night and the way he's played most of this series is he's playing like the old Mike Conley. And that's why I tilt a little bit towards Utah. But I think there's six teams that could win a surprise. I mean, I think Denver could win this. Portland could win this. Dallas, I mean, I know.
Struggling now.
I mean, he's hurt. If he's hurt, maybe that's right. Another guy on that list of injuries that you mentioned. But Doncic, for two games, looked like he's the most dominating player in the NBA.
He did, yeah.
And then you got the East Coast with Milwaukee sweeping. Philly looks like they're real.
Philly, except for Embiid went down last night. And, I mean, and who knows, I mean, even just a little nagging injury takes him down a little.
And is it all because of the schedule being bunched up? Is it because of COVID? Is it because – what is all the reasoning? I mean, we've had injuries in playoffs before that were factors in who won championships. But this list is long. It's a long list of guys that – I mean, you got Embiid and Anthony Davis that I don't know if they'll ever, I've always felt players, when they feel like they're on the verge of failing, have a tendency to get hurt.
Mm.
I know that's conspiratory, but, they, some reason players think, my ankle, I played with a bad ankle. That's why I had a bad series.
I'll have some spice.
Well, I'm going, don't be ashamed about not playing well in playoff basketball, because it's a process. You got to learn how to become a playoff basketball player.
Yeah, there's no doubt. That's why I think Michael Porter's so fascinating, is this is a whole new learning experience for him. It happened in the bubble, by the way, last year in the seeding round. I think he had that 37-point game, 30-point game. He thought, oh, he's ready for the playoffs. You get to the playoffs, and then it was a whole different puzzle for him to sort of solve. And I think the same thing's going on with him right now. I don't think it's, is he a good, is he a bad player, is he fake this or that? I think it's a puzzle that he is now has to solve. And you don't get to solve this puzzle in the regular season. You have to wait for it to appear in the postseason before you get to even start.
I mean, Michael Porter Jr. in many ways is the number one priority for Portland.
Oh, yeah.
Jokic is...
inevitable.
Jokic is number one, but they don't have a lot of schemes on Jokic. I think they're doing some things with... they're trying to make Jokic put the ball on the floor and then crowd his dribble a little bit. But with Porter Jr., I'm pretty sure they're trying to make his life totally and completely miserable.
Yeah, it's good. That's pressure makes diamonds. We'll find out if that's what's on the other side. One of the, I don't want to say fascinating, because to me it's actually been a little bit frustrating, but, you know, Mark Spears, somebody I respect an enormous amount, knows more about NBA media than I'll ever know, had a comment the other day about Nuggets fans booing Carmelo, and he called it pathetic. And I took offense to that. We're going to talk about some of the things fans have done that have definitely crossed lines, but booing to me is a protest. It is a fair and decent way to interact with a game. And the fact that Carmelo, 10 years after departing Denver, is still getting booed by Nuggets fans, to me, I understand it. Speaking on behalf of Nuggets fans and speaking to Nuggets fans, I understand why they still do it. I think Nuggets fans have an enormous amount of love for Carmelo Anthony. And I hope that when it's all said and done, we get to celebrate Carmelo and he gets to be a part of this team's history and all of this. But right now, one, he's on the other team. And two, I think there is still something to, why is it always better that the league is better when New York is better? That when players go there, it's better. And, oh, the Knicks are good and the Lakers are good. And isn't this great for everybody? And I think Nuggets fans have heard this for 10 years now. And they think, are we just a footnote in your story here or in everybody else's story? And Carmelo is taking on a little bit of a brunt of that, of the whole of that. Like, he sort of represents that dynamic to Nuggets fans. So I want to ask, do you feel like Nuggets fans are wrong to boo Carmelo? And how do you see, from your perspective, your vantage point, the relationship between Carmelo and the Denver Nuggets fans?
I don't think it's out of sync with human nature.
Right.
I mean, I think we're acting just like, you know, we were left.
Right.
We were told, see you later.
Right.
We're not good enough for your brand or whatever that means. And I think there's a resentment that is honest.
Right.
I think you can be both. You can respect a greatness of a player and still be angry at him for how he acts.
I'll go even further than respect. I think there's a true, genuine love for Carmelo Anthony in Denver, still amongst diehard Denver Nuggets fans. It's a love. But it's also, as you put it, a resentment. And it's not just a resentment at him. It's almost symbolic of the whole, of this whole idea of, like, if you're in Denver, you're doing something wrong.
Small market, you know. I mean, baseball has the same thing. I mean, the Broncos are fortunate enough to win championships, but I think the thing you got to realize is, first of all, fans do not boo bad players. Fans boo good coaches and good players.
That's a good point.
Because they're a little nervous about them because they realize that they can beat them. And to be honest with you, Melo's actions early in at least two of the games, I thought he was an antagonist. I thought he was out there to kind of elbow a guy. I mean, he pushed Nokic down. I mean, there are things that Melo is doing that I think is putting the spotlight on. Hey, what's that all about?
Game one, he was definitely feeding off of that energy, the boo energy, and sort of a like, okay, if you're going to boo me, I'm going to stick it to you in the form of making a lot of three-pointers, which he did. And also, as you mentioned, getting a little chippy at knocking Jokic to the ground and some of that stuff.
But, you know, I mean, Melo is who he is. I mean, he's a hell of a scorer that still can put a big number on the board, but also can take bad shots and have a selfish nature to his game. And that's what Coach Stotts has got to manage tonight. Can you get him in the game and get him into a offensive flow where, like in game one, where all of a sudden, you know, they're making all the shots from everywhere, from Simmons to Melo? I think Portland's bench has to perform because it's not very good.
Right.
The bench is probably one of the weakest assets of their personality, and it relies on two guys, Simmons and Melo.
Yeah.
And one of those guys probably got to have a pretty effective game for them to have a successful outcome.
It's interesting. It's ironic almost in a way that the Nuggets were one of the first games of the playoffs. They're booing Carmelo, and people were, oh, how terrible of Nuggets fans to do this. But the relationship between fans and the NBA has been ugly for the last 2 weeks, really this entire playoff run. We had a thrown water bottle. We've had popcorn spilled on Russell Westbrook. We've had a player spit on Trae Young, and a bunch of other things. You know, Ja Morant's family had some disgusting things said to him. So there's been a lot of ugliness from fans so far. What do you make of it? And a broader sort of question, is this the pandemic and people don't, you know, have pent up anger or frustration and don't know how to act or something like that? Or is there a broader sort of trend between the relationship between the fans and the NBA at the moment?
I don't know if I'm sociologically smart enough to figure that one out. My gut feeling is I think it's a microcosm of what our country is going through.
That's a good point.
I think it's a little bit of the racism's out there. And I think it's COVID and being stuck in your house for a couple years, where your daily exercise and daily activities have been massively changed. And I just think there's a mental health problem with all of us. I mean, I have more depressed days than I've had. I admit that. You know, there are more days I'm hanging around. I need to get motivated just to go exercise or do something. And I also got to think that basketball players now have gone from being athletes to being Hollywood celebrities. And there's a resentment that goes with that, too. Right. I mean, love hate. I mean, a lot of when you watch a movie, you love or hate somebody sometimes. And, you know, you don't even understand the character that it's an actor sometimes. You just hate that guy who's acting that way. And I think there are cities and franchises that have a lot of love for their fan base that are a little more active. And I think Denver is a very, very positive fan base for the Denver Nuggets.
It seems like, I my theory, you know, there seems to be such a relationship between social media and growing resentments across all demographics. There's political resentments, there's racial resentments, all these different things. And it seems like maybe this is just brewing to where fans now feel, you get online, you feel comfortable adding an athlete and telling them all these terrible things about their family and this or that. And maybe it's breeding this idea that people are now getting to arenas and they think, oh, this is how we are now. I don't know, but it just seems like it's crossed such a line. It's been happening for a long time, but it's really coming to the forefront in these playoffs.
I think the social stuff is probably more powerful than you think it is. From just the
social media.
The social media, the Twitter, the Instagram, all that stuff. You can punch somebody so easily and feel good about it.
Right, right.
And you have no repercussion because of it. And I think, you know, the line of throwing a bottle that could actually hurt, maybe if it hits a kid, it could really hurt a kid. You know, and if that bottle's glass, it would even be worse. So I also think maybe the security of the buildings is not as up to date or active, or, you know, a lot of these buildings have 200 events a year in them, and now they've had 20.
Right.
And so maybe the security needs to be updated and, you know, manipulated in a way that can be more of a positive influence than a negative influence.
Did you ever feel unsafe in an arena?
No. No. I mean, I was a fighter.
You didn't. Yeah. You felt like maybe somebody would attack, but you felt like you would hold your own if they did.
I was stupid in that area. You know, I realized very early the basketball fights don't last more than 30 seconds.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. Just got to hold on for a couple seconds. Another major story here that I think is interesting, I want to get your thoughts on. Naomi Osaka, the tennis player, she declined to do a presser earlier this week, a post-game presser, and then as a result ended up quitting or threatened to be thrown out and then quit the tournament. And it's become a talking point. One of the things I wonder, you know, the media does talk to players after every single game. They talk to coaches as well after practices. There are times back in the day, you know, before COVID kind of really disrupted everything, where it did feel sometimes like I was at Pepsi Center three times in one day talking to the players. And I'd be like, okay, we probably could cut one or two of these out. Do you feel though, like what do you feel is the responsibility of coaches and players to speak to the media, and do you feel like it's in line for an evolution?
I would hope so. I always felt coaches had to speak to the media three times, after shoot-around, before a game, and after the game. I thought that was way too much.
Yeah.
And I don't know which one you should throw out, or could you throw out two of them? I mean, I think you should be able to reasonably come up with a platform that the media would be happy and the players and coaches could be happy. And maybe this is a way of saying that mental health is affected by the media. We are now being affected by social media, but we're also being affected by having to answer questions of our failures and our disappointments immediately after failing, instead of having that moment of cooling down and relaxing and maybe reviewing the film and seeing what I did right and what I did wrong. I think the reaction is instantaneous. We want it to be immediate. And because of that, I think you got some guys and some women and some athletes that are bothered by it.
Yeah.
And maybe we should be more realistic to say that, you know, people being able to talk to the media, it's not always easy.
Right.
And the anxiety that comes with it, the paranoia that might come with it. And then, you know, as an organization, you want your players to say the right things. And when they say the wrong things, it hurts. It hurts the image of your organization and sometimes of your city.
Right. To me, it's interesting, and there's layers to it, because at the same time, as much as I understand this, and I do think there's an evolution that's in place, because sometimes it can feel like redundant. We're doing this again. We're asking the same questions from the same people, all this stuff. I also worry about, there's been a lot of conversation in the last 24 hours about, do we even need the media? Can't players speak to the public directly? And I always think, you know, there is a reason that there is a buffer between those things. Not just in sports as much as it is in every other arena where the media has an important role. And I do worry that we could swing too far the other way where all of a sudden there's no access and now a team is allowed to tell their own story in their own way and cover themselves. And of course, that's not what you want. You want to be able to have a third party, you know, the press, the fourth estate here, to be able to sort of buffer those things. So to me, it's an interesting thing. And more to the point, the relationship between players and the media, players and fans, the NBA and fans, all of this stuff just seems to be fraying in a way that concerns me. There's more hatreds amongst those different groups of people than there are sort of working relationships right now. And I find that to be a concern. But let's get to some of the questions here, Kale. You have some, we have a super chat and a couple other ones. Do we want to get to the super chat first?
Yep.
All right, let's check out the super chat here.
Love George Carl. How much of a coach's job is pure basketball and how much is not? For example, business or PR, et cetera. And how much is X and O's versus managing players?
You like this one. We've talked about this one before.
I would say the vast majority is ego management and attitude adjustment and media relations. So I'd say over 50%. When we have a day, it's just basketball. It's a celebration for the coaches. We just love to have a practice day where, for some reason, we're on the road and the media is only going to be two or three guys and we can just do our jobs and do it without a lot of stress or anticipation of maybe having a conflict of some sort. You know, even in a 20-point win, there's always one or two players who are unhappy with their minutes or their performance, or there's a little bit of an ego adjustment almost every day of every NBA season. Now, some of that is the maturity of your team, the experience of your team, the leadership of your team can sometimes take care of a lot of that. But I would say it's 20 years ago, it was more basketball oriented than often, you know, other basketball activity oriented. Today, it's probably more basketball, less basketball oriented, and much more what the hell's going on, how we're going to make sure we stay positive here.
What else we got?
All right. This is a fun one. Coach, what is your craziest memory of fans in Europe?
Oh, my God. In Europe, we were playing a semifinal game to go to the European Cup. I don't know what cup it was, but it was, I think, the second cup in Europe.
Which team is this you're coaching?
Real Madrid.
Okay.
and we were playing Pauk in Thessalonica. And I'm at pregame meal, and I get my assistant coach asked me to come, and they said, we want to meet with you. The organizers of the game want to meet with you in the back room. And I go, wow, well, we've never done this before. Well, they had planned a bus and a false bus because they had reports that the buses were going to get stoned on the way to the game.
Oh, my gosh. That's insane.
And then we get to the game. The game's a 9 o'clock game in it's in Thessalonica. And they have stormtroopers with their shields that would build a tunnel from the bus to get inside the building.
Wow.
Because the fans were above us, and they were throwing rocks and lighters and coins.
This is insane.
And then you get in the building, and they have a concert going on to rev up the crowd before the game. And so when we came out on the court for our warm-up, we got bombed with coins and lighters and all this stuff. So Pauk, that game in Pauk was pretty crazy. And then it...
That's also, too much. As much as it's a great story, like, that's insane.
Greece is a little insane.
Yeah. I've seen the videos with firecrackers and flares going off while this game's going on, and you just think, what the hell is this?
Well, I want you to know, I also played in the... We played in a championship game against Messina, and Gallo's dad was on this team in Florence. Real Madrid played Bologna in Florence for the European Championship. And the fans of Bologna killed a baby bull in the parking lot before the game.
It's a little intense, man. A little intense.
I think the European fans are much crazier than the American fans.
All right, what else we got?
All right, Coach, what do you think of all the players who recently joined the Nuggets? Who integrated in the best way, and who and from who of them do you expect the most?
So this would, I assume, mean Faku. You've got Howard. You've got Austin Gordon, Rivers, Jermichael Green.
You got a lot of new faces.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole thing comes down to is this team is quite different than the team that played in the bubble last year. The one that is, I think, played great is Faku. I mean, I think he's giving us all he can give us. We're probably asking a little bit too much of him. The guy that's probably more disappointing is Gordon. And the guy that I think we need to play really well these next three games is Rivers.
Yeah.
I mean, Rivers has got to play like a starting player rather than a bench player. And that's asking a lot of a guy that was sitting in on his couch 6 weeks ago.
I've really enjoyed the Austin Rivers story.
I think he's been great.
He's been great. I've enjoyed hearing him speak. I'm rooting for him, you know, a little extra.
And I have a quiet confidence he's going to, I mean, he might not.
Right.
Might not be able to deliver this, but he has the courage to do it. And I think at times he's played at a high level in the NBA basketball that he might do it.
Yeah. Let's get a couple more in.
One more super chat coming in from Logan here. Coach, what do you think Jokic will do/say during his MVP speech?
I think he'll make a joke. I think he'll make it funny. He'll try to make it funny. I mean, he doesn't want the spotlight on him. He tries to do things that puts the spotlight someplace else.
Right.
His humility is genuine, is real. And I think we all enjoy it. And his comedy, even though he's a... You know, he's broken English a little bit. His comedy is really good too. So, I think he's he'll make it. He'll have a moment of celebration, but I think he'll also have a moment of levity.
It's funny. There's a big documentary that just aired in Serbia on Jokic and sort of his rise. And in it, he says, I know just because some people send the translation, that he hopes to be Denver's Tim Duncan and stay his entire career here. Now, I know a lot of players say that. I mean, not every player that's ever made that proclamation has ended up sticking to it. But it does give me hope because obviously he's been so great to the city of Denver. It does give me hope that he'll be a rare example.
I think he'll do it. I'm betting he'll do it.
All right. I like it. Your confidence, his confidence, I'm in. What else?
All right. This is one that I'm personally interested in. Coach, what do you think is at the root of Denver's season-long struggles in the third quarter?
That is an interesting one.
I mean, that's so hard for me. I think a little bit of it is because of an inconsistent roster. So many multiple different changes in lineups. And, I mean, not only little changes, but major personality changes, I think creates an uncertainty. And I just think that I think the whole season, this season, last season, it just doesn't have a great rhythm and builds a connection and confidence that most NBA seasons have. At this time of the year, we kind of know who the top four or five teams are, and we don't know. Mm. You just got done saying.
Right,
We don't know who the top four or five NBA basketball teams are right now. I think everybody will throw Brooklyn in there, but I don't trust Brooklyn right now. I'm sorry. They got to show me something in the next couple rounds.
Next round is going to be great. I'm impressed with Milwaukee.
And so we have a series that we really don't have a favorite. There's not a favorite right now. I don't care how much you love the Lakers. You're not betting on the Lakers right now. I don't care who you are, unless you're just a total loyal diehard guy. You know, 3 days ago, we thought the Clippers were down the toilet.
They turned it around.
And the Lakers were going to win it. And now the Lakers look like they're down the toilet, and it looks like the Clippers are going to win it. So we're mystified by it. I think because of that, the uncertainty, the crazy schedule, the personality changes, doesn't build a lot of continuity.
Yeah. We got a couple more here. These are good.
This came in while you were talking about how Portland is making Michael Porter Jr.'s life a little bit of hell right now. In your opinion, how would you get MPJ open looks?
I think I would know what his favorite plays are. I would stay away from jump shots. I would stay away from trying to get him downhill, maybe to the rim, and trying to get him fouled. I haven't seen many post up games with him, but you know he's being covered by a guy smaller than him in Powell. Maybe post him up. I don't know. Maybe give him an opportunity to get an easy basket. Get an offensive basket, maybe back cut him out of the corner to get a dunk. Is there a lob play that I could get him maybe an opportunity to get an easy basket? I'd like to get him 6 points in the game easy rather than trying to take three threes and make two of them.
Hmm. Do you feel like the onus is more on him to sort of overcome something or on the team and Coach Malone to get him in his comfort spots?
I mean, they all have a responsibility. I really think it's, you know, again, I always throw this out because I love point guards. I mean, I think, can Faku come up with a play? Is there a pick and roll slip or something that I can help him get an easy basket? And I think Malone might have does he have a lob play out of the first time out that gets him a lob play? Do you throw him a post up? There's all types of different ways. But in the sense that the best way for Michael Porter Jr. to have a great game tonight, he gets into the flow of the game, he gets into the rhythm of the game, and you can feel that he's engaged, as where the last game we saw him totally disengaged.
Yeah. Let's get one more, Kel. You got one more great one?
All right, this is a good one to end on. Can Coach indicate one thing that Nuggets as a team can improve easily and fast, but they just haven't been doing it? So heading into the last three games, what's the one
easiest,
adjustment? Yeah, what's the easiest adjustment you could see?
Oh, for me, the thing I would be looking at as a coach going into this game is I want better shot selection and I want lesser turnovers. And there was about a half a dozen unforced turnovers by Porter Jr. I think had three. Millsap had a couple. They just kind of fumbled the ball to the defense. And I know it looked like Portland was trying to come down on the dribble a little bit more than they were earlier in the series. But I like to see an offensively fresh, clean, sharp game. Because I don't think Portland is a great defensive team, but they've kind of found a little magic there, and they're going to come out with that. And if we can take that away from them and go back to the normal Portland defense, I think we'd be in a better place.
All right, everybody, that does it for this edition of the Keeping It 1000 podcast. Remember, this is also a podcast, so you can subscribe on iTunes. You can leave a rating and review, and you'll never miss an episode when they come in. Sometimes we've been doing these live lately, and I've been liking it. I've been liking seeing all the fan interaction and everybody talking. But if you do miss this one or you want to listen to it while you're driving to or from work, you can check that out on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it is you get your podcasts. Meanwhile, hit the like button on your way out, everybody, and we'll see you all next time.